poem I've brought this morning is Ann Sexton's poem, Welcome Morning. There is joy in all, in the hair I brush each morning, in the cannon towel newly washed that I rub my body with each morning, in the chapel of eggs I cook each morning, in the outcry from the kettle that heats my coffee each morning, in the spoon and the chair that cry, "Hello there, Anne," each morning, in the godhead of the table that I set my silver plate cup upon each morning. All of this is God, right here in my pea-green house each morning. And I mean, though I often forget to give thanks, to faint down by the kitchen table in prayer of rejoicing as the holy birds at the kitchen window peck into their marriage of seeds. So while I think of it, let me paint a thank you on my palm for this God, this laughter of the morning, lest it go unspoken. The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young. Whenever my grandmother was exasperated, she would put her hands on her hips and exclaim, "For the love of God." When we kids tracked mud into her kitchen, "For the love of God." When she burned something on the stove, "For the love of God." If it was raining too hard to hang clothes out on the line, "For the love of God." It was a multi-purpose phrase, you see. It was my grandmother's way of shrugging off the inevitable. It was her way of linking her faith to the day-to-day frustrations of her life, "For the love of God." The God I grew up with was not a punishing God. He, and yes, God in those days was definitely a he. He was patient and kind, benevolent, and always forgiving. In fact, I always thought he was a little over-forgiving. For me, the God was most real in the ancient stories of the Hebrew Scriptures and in the life and actions of Jesus of Nazareth. He came alive in the hymns we sang and the prayers we said. The God I grew up with was deeply concerned with the plight of the poor. He valued the contribution of women. His love extended to all of the children around the world. The gates of heaven swung wide on their hinges. There was no person so bad as to be beyond redemption. The God I grew up with was the God of love, and she still is. I don't know about you, but my experience with God is intensely personal. It's almost so personal that it can't be talked about intelligently. Our relationship, God's and mine, is the stuff of poetry. As vast as the universe and as intimate as the air I breathe, God delights me, disappoints me, confuses me, and sustains me. God knows my name. I know that if I try to figure out what's going on in this relationship, I'm going to ball myself up in knots. Because you know I'm a smart person, and smart people get themselves in trouble when it comes to theology. I can come to a variety of reasonable theological conclusions, all of them perfectly supportable, that range from polytheism to atheism. But my relationship with the holy transcends thinking. It moves from my head to my heart and then to my stomach. My relationship is experiential. It supports me in time of pain and sorrow. It leads me through times of confusion and bitterness. It offers me compassion when I harden my heart. It gives me courage when my own nerve fails. It allows me to be fully human, forgiven and forgiving. Now, I'm not particularly concerned with what people believe. I am, however, concerned with how they live what they believe. Each of us connects deeply with something, be it God or nature or one another. We care deeply about something, and this deep place of caring is faith. But language trips us up. Too often we avoid religious conversations because we find the theological language objectionable. Words like sin and salvation and redemption beg to be wrestled with, and there is a time and place for such wrestling, but not always. Especially when we are in conversation with people of other faiths, we must cease our wrestling a little bit, at least for the time being, you and I. We must look for deeper connections that exist beneath the theological words. They are only words, after all. When I say that I have a personal relationship with God, I don't even really know what that means. But I do know that people of other faiths have a similar relationship with the divine. And that is where our connection lies. Our connection is not about the exact words we use. It is about heart speaking to heart. Now, I have true sympathy for Unitarian Universalists who have a difficult time navigating the waters of traditional religion. Language matters to us. We are some of the folks for whom it most matters. And most other religions, quite frankly, do not value personal interpretation as a central religious tenet like we do. When individual Catholics may disagree about the nature of God, Catholicism worships God. While individual Muslims might have different ideas about the nature of prayer, Islam requires prayer. And though individual Jews may have different views of Yom Kippur, Judaism includes this high holy day. Religious freedom has taken us UUs in a different direction. In questioning all religious traditions and practices and language, we have set out into uncharted waters. This theological adventure of ours is thrilling, but it is also lonely. And I wonder, how might we sail just a little bit closer to our religious neighbors? I think if we UUs can translate God as love, we might have a chance to speak to other religious people. If we can agree that God is love, we might be able to move beyond this sanctuary out into that world that awaits us. If we can agree that God is love, we might even ask the person that we are sitting next to this morning what he or she actually believes. Part of what makes Unitarian Universalists focus so intently on the social ills of the world is that we are often scared to reveal what we believe personally. We worry that the person next to us is a Christian and we're not Christian, or the person is an atheist and we're not an atheist. Out of politeness, we avoid talking to one another about spirituality. We would happily talk about politics, money, and sex before we would talk about what we believe. For the love of God, my grandmother would say. We are sincerely nervous to talk to each other about life's big questions. And yet, we're open to poetry, we're open to scripture, we're open to the wise words from the long distant past. The ancient words of the 139th Psalm ask, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limit of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you, The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. For it is you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You are not here by mistake. You have not chosen this hour and this church badly or foolishly. You have not been deceived by your faith. No trick has led you astray. You are here in this sanctuary for the same reason I am. We are here to find deep, purposeful community. We are here to laugh and cry and to be at peace with ourselves. We are here to compliment and complain and cooperate. You are here for me, and I am here for you. We are not here, you and I, by mistake. For nothing so precious has ever been offered you or me than the chance to travel in one another's company. My grandmother, the same one who would go around saying, "For the love of God," knew what faithfulness was. She was faithful to the memory of a daughter who died in childhood at age 12. She was faithful to the county library, where she was the sole librarian for 25 years. She was faithful to a husband for nearly 50 years, faithful to him even as he spent a decade dying of Parkinson's disease. She was faithful to friends and neighbors. She was faithful to her town and its many small businesses. And of course, she was faithful to her church. This grandmother, who late in her life confessed to me that she had never really believed in the Trinity at all, went to church every Sunday. She went to adult Bible study every week. She played the piano for the children's chapel. She kept a spare key to the church at home should anyone need to get in it when the pastor was away. And she collected the offering money each Sunday, filling out a deposit slip at her dining room table. And on Monday mornings, she would walk the deposit to the bank. As a small child, I used to think this grandmother was both the most trusted person in the church and the richest. They let her just take all of that money home with her. With bank bag in hand, she would lead me up the aisle at the end of the service to help her empty the offering plates. With my little hands, I would help her stuff white offering envelopes and random fives and tens into the zippered bag. The loose coins in the plate were my special task. Dumping them out on the table once we got back to her house, I got to count them and roll them in those little paper wrappers, if you all remember those. Carefully tallied up the weekly collection and added the amount to her ledger book. We talked and laughed as we worked. My grandmother's faithfulness taught me how important it is to support a church. It's important to attend it, it's important to work for it, and it's important to give it money. This is what she did for the love of God. Even in her worst moments of selfishness, my grandmother knew God loved her. Even at her most petty and critical, she knew that she was held in grace. As life dealt her blows, the death of a second daughter to a car accident, or the pain of seeing her husband's mind fade before her eyes, she knew her faith would see her through. Even as Alzheimer's continued to strip away any semblance of my grandmother during her last years, she knew and I knew that she was held in love. Even as the little shell of her body breathed its way through her last days in a nursing home, I believe God knew exactly where she was. As she slowly died, I prayed for my grandmother every day. I prayed that she might have something to enjoy each day. I prayed that her nurses be kind to her. I prayed that her mind might not be too confused, not too lost that day in her illness. And I prayed that she might go to sleep one night soon and not wake up again. I knew that she would not want to continue living like this. She would have looked at herself, summed up the situation, and whispered, "For the love of God." She would not have been afraid to face her own death. She knew that love would hold her through it. If we can get beyond our fear, you and I, if we can get beyond our literalism, if we can get beyond the illusion of our separateness, we too can come to a place of faithfulness. We can come to a place of trust. We can come to a place of love. So be it. Amen.